We are up to Perachov Tes Pasuk Yud. Perachov Tes Pasuk, we're discussing the Nevuah relating to Mitzrayim, and Mitzrayim is going to come to a very bitter end. And we mentioned yesterday that there are different periods in history of when Mitzrayim, different tkufos where Mitzrayim suffered Chorban. Of course, the main Chorban was at the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim, Paro Melech Mitzrayim, but there was another Chorban that took place at the time of Nebuchadnezzar, and seemingly another Chorban which took place even a little bit later. So the different tkufos, there was a lot of verbosity, a lot of repetition, and all of these things obviously allude to different tkufos, even different paros. There's Paro Melech Mitzrayim, there's Paro Necho. That's the Paro that was the time of Nebuchadnezzar. He was conquered before the Churban of Klal Yisrael. Before the Churban of Klal Yisrael, the time of Yoshiyahu. At the time of Yoshiyahu, there was Paro Necho. He was the main player, and shortly thereafter, I think it was only 4 years later, Nebuchadnezzar conquered, subdued Mitzrayim. And then, of course, there's what we're learning over here, mainly the Churban of Mitzrayim, which took place after the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Some of these numbers are going to repeat itself, and we'll see some of the more details in a few moments. So let's start again with Pasuk Yud. Pasuk Yud is Perchavtes. Pasuk Yud, L'chein Hini Elecha V'El Yairecha. Again, repeating this for the third time. Hashem says, I will rise up against you and against your river, against the Nile that is the source of sustenance for the Egyptians, V'nasati Eretz Mitzrayim L'chorvos Chorev. I'm going to make it to a place of L'chorvos, of destruction. Chorev, Chorev means heat. Chorev means a place of, let's see how the Mitzudos Sioni translates this. I'm going to make this into a place of L'chorvos, Chorev, L'toseves, Be'al Marshatiyah, Churban, Chorev means destruction. He says Sioni means destruction. It's going to be a destruction, Chorev Shemama, a destruction of desolation. Now here, we get some geography. And the geography of Mitzrayim is not so simple because there are different periods of history when Mitzrayim expanded and contracted based upon different regions. So here it says, Mimigdol Sivene, that's from the tower of Sivene, name of a place, V'an Gevul Kush, until the boundary of Kush. Now, is Kush your nation? Seemingly, yes. Some in the African nation? Yes, so it's not really clear in modern terms what these boundaries are. Let's see.
In this case, it would make sense.
What?
In this case, Kush as somewhere like Ethiopia makes sense because it's to the south of Mitzrayim.
So how far down are we going? How far down are we going? That's a big question.
How far down?
Yeah. How far south do we go?
Okay,
that's the question. Where exactly is modern day Kush? Where is the ancient Egypt? This is all a big question. I don't think today the modern Egypt today goes anywhere nearly as far. No? Down south, Egypt today probably is a lot smaller than it was in the time of Chazal. I don't know, maybe not. Alright, let's see. Let us look over here at the Pasuk Yud, the Mitzvah of Stav. Pasuk Yud says, Hinei ani ilachem imcha v'imyarech Hashem. Says, I will fight against you and your river. Ritzon lema achriv meimecha v'sosot v'sech. I will cause it to dry up. Is that really true? We do know that to be true today. There are definitely rivers today. There's no question about it. There are definitely rivers and channels today that have dried up. They know this. A lot of archaeological investigations and When they talk about the Yam Suf, okay, when they talk about the Yam Suf, they can see today indented in the earth, satellite images, different channels, different indentations in the earth, where we're almost certain that years ago there was a healthy flow of water going down in certain channels, certain areas of what today is desert land. So why today has it dried up? They'll tell you it's global warming, right? That's what they'll tell you. The reason why there's no water there in that region anymore is global warming. But here the Navi says it's not global warming. This is by design. Hashem has by design caused the Egyptian, the Nile, the Yairecha, to dry up. Sorry, if you go online and you go, probably I'm sure there are videos. There's a lot of information about. You can see in the indentations in the earth there are certain, there used to be a healthy flow of water coming down very large chunks of the southern part of Egypt. Now, and this is all being predicted from where? So we go to Amar Shatia Churban Shal Shimamoin. There's going to be an utter destruction. Migdal Siveinehu Hascholas Kol Mitzrayimstad towards the north. I have no idea where is there an equivalent of Sivene today. I have no idea. All the way down to Kush. Okay, let's see Rashi. If there's Rashi Pasuk Yud, there is no Rashi. Radak Pasuk Yud. So here the post coming to describe what type of destruction will there be. It's going to be Chorev Shemama V'Yonis Antirgim L'Chorev Tzadu V'Ish Dimamu. Okay, in a complete obliteration. Let's go to Pasuk Yud Aleph. Lo Savar Ba Regel Adam V'Regel Behemo Lo Savar Ba. It says here that the leg of man will not pass through the land of Egypt. And here we have some very amazing words. Lo seishev arboim shana. This is attracted the attention of all the mepharshim. No one will live in Egypt for 40 years. What exactly does this mean? So let's see Yud Aleph and the Mitzvah Stavit first. Lo seishev arboim migoydel hashim amoyin, due to the intensity of the destruction. Okay, that's it. Now let's see Rashi. Rashi is now going to discuss this in much more detail. Let's see. Pasuk Yud Aleph. L'seishav arboim shana. Arboim ushtayim shnei ruavon nigzru b'chaloim paro. Okay, did anyone know this? I didn't know this. This was new to me. That when Hashem told Paro, he had a dream, the fat cows are going to swallow up, the lean cows are going to swallow up the fat cows. The bundles of grain that are lean are going to swallow up the bundles that are fresh. The cows was predicted they would be in Egypt 42 years of famine. Now, I think most of us think they're only supposed to be 7 years, because it says, Ve'al hi shanoi sachaloyim pamayim. Yosef said it's going to be 7 years of famine. I mean, what more do you want to perish a pasuk? And the reason why Hashem has repeated the dream twice is to indicate that it's going to happen very, very soon. It's going to happen very soon. And that's why also Yosef learned, how did Yosef know that? The fact that it's going to repeat it twice is very soon, because Yosef made that same mistake. Yosef told the Sar Hamashkim, Kim Zichartani, remember me twice. He said it twice, remember me. And Hashem punished Yosef, because you said it twice, you're going to be delayed. There's going to be a delay of 2 years. So why did Yosef say it twice? Because Yosef wanted it to happen quickly, swiftly. When you repeat something twice, Yosef himself intended was it should happen quickly. I don't want to have to wait. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Yosef, on your level of emunah, that it was a mistake. You should have put your faith in Hashem, not your faith in man, in the Sar HaMashkim. Therefore, I'm going to punish you. You're going to have to wait 2 years. But Yosef, part of the mistake was, Yosef felt that if he would repeat the request twice, it would happen very, very soon. So we see from Yosef himself that his understanding was, when you say something twice, it's going to be very quick. Hashem repeated the dream twice. It's going to happen very quickly, and it's going to happen for 7 years. Chazal tells us that when Yaakov Avinu came down, the famine stopped. The famine stopped. When did Yaakov come down? Yaakov came down to Mitzrayim 2 years after the famine started. So, and Chazal say that means for five, even though they stored away enough food for 7 years, when Yaakov came down, the famine stopped, and they had a reprieve of the 5 years. It never happened. When Yaakov died, the moment he died, he lived there for 17 years. Then Chazal say the 5 years of famine resumed. So if you learn Chazal, the simple midrash that we are much more familiar with is it was meant to be in the simple reading of Psukim. It was meant to be a famine in Egypt for 7 years. It was meant to start immediately. Indeed, it did. It stopped temporarily when Yaakov and Avinu came down 2 years later. And Yaakov lived in Egypt for 17 more years. After those 17 years, which basically means it was 19 years. 19 years since the prediction is when it resumed for the remaining 5 years. Here we have an entirely new new interpretation of a new record of the events. How will he reconcile what it says here with what it says in the Midrash and Chumash? I have no idea. Obviously, there are different dimensions to exactly what happened. So, I mean, it's not necessarily a contradiction. There are different dimensions to everything in life. Nothing in life is so simple. Here it says that originally the famine was meant to go for 42 years. What is the significance of 42 years? I don't know. I was trying to look around. Does anyone have any? Does that number pop into your mind? Seven times.
14 times 3.
So what's the significance? What's
the
significance?
The prediction was for 14 years.
Right. So you go. The prediction was for 7 years. But so Rashi explains. That if you count the number of times the dream is repeated, Paro repeated the dream to Yosef twice. The dream actually was presented when it happened. That's already twice. And then when it was seen Rashi, then when he repeated it to Yosef, that was another two times. And Yosef then himself repeated what happened. So we'll see Rashi one moment. But basically, the dream, the number 7, is repeated 6 times in the parasha. The number 7 years, that term Sheva Shanim, is repeated 6 times in the parasha. So 6 times 7 is 42. It's coming to allude that it's going to be 42 years of famine. Okay, there's going to be 42 years of famine. And when Yaakov came down, it stopped after 2 years. And when did it resume? So when did the remaining 40 years occur? Generations later. 1,000 years later.
Does it make sense to say that the famine was supposed to be for 42 years?
When the Pasuk says it's supposed to be for 7 years. And when Yosef explicitly said...
Because how could it would not have been possible to save up enough food?
Excellent question.
But it doesn't have to be consecutive.
Excellent question, and especially.
But all I'm saying is that look how you're reaching now.
Let's look at the pasuk. Pasuk here is Ahi Mikeich Nasayim Yamim Ufarish Haleim. Okay, so Paro tells him the dream. By Yomu Yosef O Paro Chaloim Paro Echad Hu Eis Asheri Helokim Moisehi LeFaro Sheva Paro Satovo Sheva Shanim Hena. Okay, v'sheva hashibulim hatavu sheva shonim hema. Chaloim echad hu. It's one dream. V'sheva, that's what Rashi is going to say over here, but that's not the traditional mikra. V'sheva hapodos harakos rose halos achrim sheva shonim hema. A third set of 17. V'sheva hashibulim harakos vashtufos chodim shiyu sheva shnei ro'av. Another 7 years. 28. 28. Who had the Rashi dibarati el paro el Hashem shalal kibo said looking for paro. Then it goes on. He nei sheva shnim boos sova gadol. Okay, no adrabo, because the 7 years are 7 good years. Whatever it is, v'kamu sheva shnei of achareihen. Clear as day. What more do you want? It will come then 7 years of famine achareihen v'nishkach kol hasava bi'eretz mitzrayim v'chilu harav es aretz. Okay, so this is a very interesting chazal. Let's see Rashi. Rashi lays it out very well. Rashi pasuk yav v'lo seishev v'lo seishev arboim shana arboim shtayim shnei ro'avon nigzru b'chaloyim paro. Rashi says 42 years were decreed in the dream of Paro. Kineged shloisha pa'amim shnichtav hachaloyim. Kineged the three times the dream is expressed, and that means twice by Paro and once by Yosef. And each time the dream, it says the number 7 twice. Sheva paros v'sheva shibulim. So therefore, it's the sheva paros, the seven emaciated cows, and the 7 stalks that were lean. The sheva shibulim ra'os ra'ah, and Paro told this over to Yosef. First, the dream was presented to Paro. Yosef then related the dream to Paro. So that's already 4 times 28, and then v'sipru li Yosef. Hare shnei pamim, the revelation of the dream, and the presentation of the dream, the Yosef omar lo, and Yosef repeats the dream back to Paro when he gives his interpretation. So that's another 2 times. So that's a total of 6, 2, 4, 6, 2 times.
6 times 7.
And 7, each one is 7, so it's 42. Sheva haparos harakos of haraos, v'sheva hashibulim harikos. He also repeats the words, harei arboim ushtaim lo ro'ah. Okay, so these years of Ra'av
have only been 2 years.
Only been 2 years. To Shinosaim Ha'Ra'av, so this is what Yosef says to Yaakov. Yosef says to Yaakov, you're not going to be able to survive living in Canaan. He tells his brothers, tell your father to come down to Mitzrayim, because you're not going to survive. Because so far it's been 2 years. And these 2 years, you see how difficult it is to survive. There's 5 more years coming. So this was the message that Yosef gave over to his brothers to deliver to his father. And he says it's already been 2 years. And immediately thereafter, Yaakov comes down and the Rav stops in his honor. How do you know that? What's the source? It's a very good Rashi. How do you know that? Because in the third year, this is a fascinating Rashi insight. It doesn't say this anywhere else. Shenemar v'sem zera v'nichya. We know this from the fact you don't get this when you learn Chumash, that when the people sold themselves as slaves to Yosef, they sold all of their possessions, and then they sold themselves as slaves, and then they said, "Is selling us for slaves? Give us zera." What do you mean zera? Give us grain, give us seeds to plant. What's the purpose of planting seeds in the ground when nothing's going to grow? So obviously, obviously the climate changed. Obviously, everything changed, and it was clear as day that now it would grow. It was once again fertile. It was the Nile was once again. So we learned from this pasuk. You learn from this pasuk at the end of the parasha when they sold themselves as slaves. It says zera that the famine was over, or at least it was suspended. And Chazal tell us it was in honor of Yaakov Avinu. Okay, so it wasn't because of any change they said obviously then it was global warming that caused the famine to happen. And then because they passed legislation and no more carbon emissions, that's why the global warming went away. Chazal say that's really what you think. I'll tell you the real reason there was a famine was because Hashem said there's going to be a famine. And the reason why the famine went away is not because the camels stopped producing carbon and they destroyed the ozone layer. It's because Hashem said it's going to stop because Yaakov Avinu has arrived.
I thought the lament Paro had was that the dreams kept on repeating.
Yeah.
So you said it's only two dreams, but it's not repeated.
I know, but the way it's recounted in the Torah, in the Chanan, it could be very well be that he had the dream many, many times. But we're counting the number of times that it's expressed, it's mentioned in the Pesukim in the Torah. Paro, it came out of Paro, in the Torah it says he had the dream. It says 7 years, the seven Paros Ra'os, and the Shibolim Hadakois Ushtufois Hakodim, that's 7-7. Then he tells it over to Yosef. That's again 7-7. Yosef repeats it back to him. That's 7-7. That's 7 times 6. Memela Chazal learned 42 years.
Well,
to...
not exactly. In the Medrash, which is the source of this Rashi, there are 3 opinions. One is 14.
Ah, okay.
One is 28, and one is 42. And then after that, and there's neither. In the Medrash or in the commentary, is there any...
Okay, I didn't come across this Medrash. I'm surprised, because my Medrash didn't mention this.
Citing our pasuk here.
So now the 40 years are going to be returned. V'harboim nifru lohem achshav.
Yeah, 40. Yeah,
40.
40. Yeah, 40 only 2 years. Yeah, so the 40 years are now going to be paid for them right now in the time of Yecheskel. This all HaKadosh Baruch is punishing for us. It's very fascinating that the punishment you see from them is something very bizarre. Lo yumsu avos al banim. Hashem is poikein avoin avos al banim al shilei shil v'al ribeyim. This is much more than 4 generations.
Yeah, but this is not Jews.
Okay, so you have to say, so why should there be a difference between Jews and non-Jews? Obviously, there is.
Like
we're the
chosen people.
So, I mean, the reason why I'm saying this, I was preparing today for to say in the third part the about war, about this week's parasha, there was a milchama, against, I think, Midian, I forgot, and Vayish Mimenu Shevi. So I want to talk about the topic of, are you allowed to kill a neutralized terrorist? Once the terrorist already is on the ground and he's his hands are on his head, are you still allowed to kill him and according to halacha?
Yes.
So, what?
You'll have to kill him with the white flag.
With the white flag. So today there would be an outrage. Okay, the world, especially Israel. Oh, can you imagine? It happened last year. That's the whole topic. Last year, right. So that's the whole topic of Mishnah. What halacha says. So here, okay, so we're going to talk about this. So one of the topics, that one of the, a lot of the sources deals with non-Jews. And a lot of the interesting, a lot of non-Jews, Antoninos, he killed his servants. We'll talk about this. When he went to Golan with Rabbeinu HaKadosh, he went to learn secretly with Rabbeinu HaKadosh. He built a special tunnel, and the Gemara says, after each passageway, he killed the servants that accompanied him. Because he was afraid they would reveal that Antoninos went to the secret. So how was he allowed to kill them? Because he was afraid maybe they would reveal his hiding place and his life would be in jeopardy. So Tosfos discusses this sugya, and there's a sefer Chassidim, and you'll use this to learn the halacha: are you allowed to kill a Safek Roidef? What's the connection? That's a guy and it's a Jew. Okay, you want to deal with a sucker for a Safek Roidef among Jews? How can you learn from a Safek Roidef Antoninos? He wasn't Jewish. He wasn't bound to follow the laws of Klal Yisrael. He's also a Melech. Yet, you see from Tosfos, we'll discuss some of the sources later on, and just because we're brainwashed and thinking, you know, it's true, there's a fundamental difference between a Jew and a guy, but not all the time. Not all the time. There are certain areas in halacha that cover them both together.
But in the same passage was when he sent the rabbi once, take a look if the guard is there, and the rabbi found the guard was there, so he revived him.
Trias HaMesim?
Yes.
I don't remember the Gemara.
Because they didn't want that he will go back and find the guard dead. He was seeing that the rabbi killed him, so he revived him.
Trias
HaMesim. Yeah, so
alright, whatever that story is. Alright. But over here, I don't know. It's really a very, very complicated thing. And why is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going, these are people, human beings, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu here is now bringing upon them a famine that was really meant to be 1,000 years ago.
And now, there's another opinion.
Yeah.
Quoting the Sifri, that the famine resumed after Yaakov's death.
Right, that's why I mentioned that. I mentioned that in the beginning. Right, immediately, exactly. I mentioned that. Now that's what we learn. When we learn Chumash, that's what we learn. The moment that Yaakov died, after then right away the famine came back. But over here it's saying it did not. It came back in the time of Yechezkel. This is a very challenging question. It bothers me to know, and when I read about the Chmelnytsky massacres in 1648. So if you look at after, they go and they talk about the horrors, they're right in the back. Al-Pi Kabbalah, how are we to understand? People who write about the Holocaust today, so right away they're censored, they're banned. Anyone that would dare today say, give you a reason why the Holocaust happened, yeah, I mean, it's just bizarre. Why would even a person even... They right away, you shoot them down. No one can tell you why the Holocaust happened. People do it all the time. They tell you because of reform, because of this, because of that, all these crazy reasons, but it's not, everything is said and done. There's no way to explain the tragedy, pain, the suffering that came upon 6 million people, and more, the whole world. Whatever Avera person could have committed is just beyond understanding. So yet, when you write about 1648, people take the liberty and say, it was such a long time ago, so there we can already start analyzing why it happened. Chas v'shalom to say such a thing. And one of the things I always read about is the people, again, this is not me, this bothers me to no end, the people that were living in that generation, you're going to be shocked to hear this, but that's what it says, were Gilgulim of the people that lived in the time of Haman, the time of Mordechai the Esther, who bowed down to the Tzelem, bow down to the idol of Nebuchadnezzar, And Hashem had rachmanis upon them in the time of Mordechai v'Esther, but there still was a tikkun that was necessary, and this was fulfilled in the time of 1648. Come on, how can you say that? How can you say such a thing? You want to say it, keep it to yourself. Don't put it in print. Don't put it in print. But yet over here, how do we struggle with this? Over here dealing with Egyptians, there was a gezerah for some reason on the Egyptians at the time of Yaakov Avinu. There's going to be a famine for 42 years. Why was there a gezerah? It was a gezerah. I don't know. It doesn't say why they did averus. It doesn't say why arrogance. Avod Zara. They were ervas haaretz. You could say whatever you want to say. Whatever the reason, there was a gezerah. There was going to be a famine for 42 years. You want to say it wasn't a gezerah. It was a natural occurrence. Who knows? And now Hashem suspended it and is bringing it upon a nation 1,000 years later. 1,000 years later. So if you want to say they're going to suffer because of what they did to Klal Yisrael, like we learned yesterday, they were the Mishne Sakoneh, that they gave Klal Yisrael full support, they misled Klal Yisrael, fine. Okay, I understand. But you want to go and say that it's an old debt from 1,000 years ago, it's a very challenging Hashkafic idea to understand how Hashem runs the world. So it says over here, V'arboim nifru l'ham asha v'lo yiteshev arbom shana teshev shara. Over here we have a Rabbi Michal. We have here some French. What does it mean? You will not teshev. What does it mean teshev? You're not going to... Not be settled for 40 years. Okay, now this is one interpretation. Now to the rescue, this is very difficult. This is Medrash. Let's see Radak. Radak and Rashi and Maral and the Malbim have a little bit different approach. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Loi Savar Bo Arboim Shana Yesh Drosh. Lama Arboim Shana. Okay, these are Drash. He quotes Rashi. Drosh, not Pshutshal Mikra. Why 40 years? Ki Arboim Shtaim Shnei Ravon Nigzru Limitraim Bechalim Paro. There was a gzera 42 years of famine in the time of Paro. Kineged Shaloisha Pe'amim Shenichtav Hachaloim. 3 times the dream is written in the Torah. And each time the dream is written, it mentions the 7 years of famine twice. Represented by the cows, the lean cows, and the emation and the thin stalks. Sheva parois, the sheva shibolim, ra'os, ra'paro, the sipur liyosef, hare shnei pamim, arbo, osar, shehem, eshim, ushmoinus, that's 2 times 14, which is 28. And Yosef repeated it again, the yosef omar sheva haparois, harakos, ra'os, the sheva hashibolim, harakos. Hare hine hina arbo esrei, that's another 14. A grand total of the esrei mishmona, the 28 times of Paro, the 14 times of Yosef, a grand total of hine arboim ushtayim. V'hoyu l'hem shtei shanim harav k'mo shekosov, kizesh nasayim harav. Yosef said to his brothers, 2 years have passed. U'mishayorad Yaakov avinu, when Yaakov descended, l'mitzrayim nifsak harav, the famine stopped. Nisharu arboim shana, we're left with 40 years. V'nigzar olech liyos chareva osam arboim shana, and now it's payday. Now it's payday that's coming back to haunt them. Now, if you look in the Malbim, he explains what it means 40 years. Pasuk tes in the Malbim, tia eretz mitzrayim l'shmo v'charba v'yodu kin yashem b'ze yaskiru. Is that the Malbim of the first? Let's just see what's over here. No, this is a different Malbim. But let's read what it's there anyway. It's very interesting. Is there anyway interesting what it says here? Because I mentioned this to you before. In this Malbim, Pasuk Tes, B'zeh Yakiru Elokusi B'yoyser B'ma Shehevesi HaMachariv Al Hartzam Ata Be'er Churban Shlishi Kololi Sheyilim Mitzrayim. He's explaining the verbosity, the repetition. This refers to the third Churban. It was the 27th year of Nebuchadnezzar. Shmoina Shana Achar HaChurban, 8 years after the Churban. 8 years later, Shekvar Nosa Avoinoi Mashaloi Ovar Ozar Livnei Yisrael, Rak Misiba Acheres, Yan Omar, and besides, He already, Paro already, they already destroyed once before for not supporting, for not keeping their word. Mitzrayim promised Klal Yisrael they would support them, they would come to their rescue, so that they already suffered the Churban Sheni. That was already a second Churban. Now the Churban Shlishi, which took place 8 years after the Churban, was in punishment for what it says in the pasuk we said before, Yan Omar Yoiri Liva Ni As Osisi Shadain Hoyim Yachis Kokoch El Yor, the Atsmai Shamak Shesh Lakechalakus, Kigam Achar Hamaka Haniska the Kerva Ksos Mearzo, Dain Lo Niv Lito Malchus Mishai Mikol Luchol. Even after his land was partially destroyed, at the same time that Paro destroyed the Churban. In other words, there was a second Churban. Mitzrayim was destroyed approximately at the same time that Yerushalayim was destroyed. And now, 8 years later, Egypt rebuilt themselves to some degree, and now Nebuchadnezzar is coming back for a second round to destroy them a second time. The first destruction was in punishment for being a false source of support for Klal Yisrael, and the third Churban, with this term, this one that took place 8 years later, was in punishment for the arrogance of Egypt. They claimed the reason why they were able to rebuild themselves after Paro destroyed them at the time of the Yerushalayim was because of their power. They are self-made people. Okay, let's go to the next pasuk. Pasuk Yud Beis. V'nasati es eretz Mitzrayim shemama b'soch arotzos nishamos. I'm going to make Egypt desolate among the lands. Nishamos, among the Arotzos, Nishamos, among the lands that are desolate. The Arecha B'soch Orem Mich Mochorovois, and its cities will be among the cities that have been destroyed. Tiyena Shemama, Arboim Shon, again he repeats the thing again twice, 40 years. Vahafi Tzoysias Mitzrayim Bagoyim, I will disperse them among the nations. Vizeri Sim Bo Arotzos, they will be scattered among the lands. Like we discussed yesterday in great length, this idea of dispersal represents the ultimate theme of Golos. Pasuk Yud Beis in the Mitzudos David, B'Seich HaRotzos, Ritzon Olema, Doim L'Sha HaRotzos, L'Shamos, period. That's all he says. Rashi, Pasuk Yud Beis, there is none. Radak, Pasuk Yud Beis, very short. M'vorhu, it's self-understood. Mochor Ravois, Muf Olois, it's a grammatical term. We'll leave it with that. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Now, Kikoyim HaRashem Elokim. So says Hashem, Mikeitz Arboim Shona. Now, here's what's interesting. At the end of these 40 years, Akabetz Es Mitzrayim, Min Ho'amim, there's going to be redemption. There's going to be the ingathering. And this was Min Ho'amim, Asher Nafot Sushama, which you have been dispersed. Pasuk Yidalid, V'shavti Yeshvus Mitzrayim, I will return the captivity of the Egyptians. V'ashi V'yisiyosam Eretz Pasrois, I will return them to the land of Pasros, one of the regions, I have no idea where this is, the modern day Pasros. Al Eretz
Mich. I thought it was part of Mitzrayim.
It is. Yeah. We're talking about Mitzrayim now. Yeah. Hashem says after these 40 years, Egypt will be restored. Egypt will witness Kibbutz Golios. Egypt will witness redemption. And the people will be returned to Hashvos Al Eretz Pasros, the land of Pasros. Pasros, now what is Pasros? Al Eretz Mechurasam. We had this for a few times. What does it mean, Mechurasam? It means one of two things. Either it means Megurasam. You have to interchange the Chaf with a Gimel. And when you change it from Mechurasam to Megurasam, it means their dwelling place, a Mogor. A Mogor is a dwelling place. So the land of Pasros is the land of their dwelling. This was their capital, maybe. This was a very popular center of Egypt. The other translation of Mechurasa means their like, I guess their flag, their what hakara, what makes them unique, what makes them noticeable. Egypt's qualities, the uniqueness, their logo, their flagship city, which represented the unique character of Egypt, was the land of Pasros. So Eretz Mechurasa means the land of what the unique character. You have this word, Mefarsh will say, by Ruvain and Shimon. Ruvain Klei Chomos, Mechero Sehem. What does it mean, Mechero Sehem? It means this, it's their symbol. It's what makes them noticeable. When you look at a weapon, you right away associate that weapon with Reuven and Shimon because they were the ones who were the warriors. They were the very powerful people. The Hayushana, here is the curse. Even though there's going to be an ingathering of the Golas, Hayushana, you'll be over there. Mamlocha Shifu, that's a very famous pasuk that's always referred to. After this happens, no longer will they have any, they will no longer be a major world player. Egypt, once upon a time, was the superpower of the world. This is where all of the attention was focused. After the Churban of Egypt, after Nebuchadnezzar humbles them and they're chori for 40 years, even though there will be some degree of rebuilding and a degree of... They're not a player anymore. They're not a player. They're going to be a third world country. No one's going to give them any attention. Pasuk and Tezomo and Pasuk, because they're a very famous Pasuk.
When was Cleopatra living?
I don't know.
She was
Cleopatra? Was she much later, Cleopatra? But it wasn't. It says at least in Tanakh they were never recognized.
She was trying to endear herself to Caesar.
On the world stage, Egypt is never given prominence. They were always reduced to a class B. This is a very famous pasuk. Pasuk Mem Tezvav Min Hamamlochais. Relative to all the nations, Tiyesh Shifalah, you will be low. You will no longer rise up against the nations. You will no longer be elevated among the nations. Vehim Atitim, I will diminish you. I will make you Maat Levilti Redos Bagoyim. You no longer will have a say. You no longer have the ability to reduce, to rule over the nations. Okay, now let's take a look over here at all these psukim together. There's a lot going on over here. Pasuk Yud Gimel. First, Pasuk Yud Gimel 2, all these psukim starting from Yud Gimel. Yeah.
In what's called Upper Egypt, for some reason, Upper Egypt is in the southern part of Egypt. Because everything is upside down. And reminds us of the Pasrusim mentioned in
Pasrusim.
All right, let's see what it says. We have a lot of psukim here, and there's some midrashim. Yud Gimel through Tesvav. Let's do one more pasuk. There's one more pasuk. All together. Pasuk Tezayin. V'lo yeoi leves Yisrael lenivtach maskir avayin. And at this point in time, when they cease to exist, so no longer will Klal Yisrael ever even have a havamina that we can rely upon them. This was always a source of trouble for Klal Yisrael in that they put their confidence in Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim always said, we got your back. Mitzrayim was always a nation that Klal Yisrael turned to and said, just in case we have trouble with Sancheiriv, Egypt will come to our defense. If we have trouble with Nebuchadnezzar, Egypt will come to our defense. So this was a mazkir avayin. This was a remembrance of sin. As long as there Egypt exists, when Hashem looks in Egypt, Hashem is always reminded, oh, Egypt, this is the nation that Klal Yisrael, they are the ones whom my nation has exchanged me for. It used to be in the good old days, Klal Yisrael, they would say, Shema Yisrael Hashem Lokin Hashem Echad. Ein lanu lihishohin ela al avinu shel ha-shamayim. So now Hashem says, and look at Egypt. Egypt, they're the new God. Klal Yisrael would say, Ein anu lihishohin ela al Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is going to come to our rescue at the time of Sanhedrin, at the time of Nebuchadnezzar. So Egypt was always a mazkir of honor, was a remembrance of sin for Klal Yisrael. Bifnoi samach adahem, when the Jewish people would turn to them for support. Now that Egypt ceases to exist, so this stain in the world no longer is present, there's never a havamin anymore, and Klal Yisrael will look to Egypt for support, and therefore it will be to the benefit of Klal Yisrael, the Yadu, the whole world will know when this happens. Ki ani Hashem Elokim, and it's I Hashem Elokim, which is the common theme of the Navi, Hashem Elokim, I'm Neman, my word is true. If I say you're going to be destroyed, you are going to be destroyed. Make no mistake about it. Okay. Let's go see all of these psukim together. Pasuk Yud Gimel all the way through Pasuk Tes Zayin. Pasuk Yud Gimel says, Pasuk Yud Gimel Limitzu Dostavid Miketz Ritzon Olay Ma'am Yisrael Aboyim Shon Nakhapsim V'lo B'Soch Hazman. Hashem says, after 40 years of legal land of desolation where no human being will walk, no animal will walk. I don't know if we even have this on record. I don't know, I don't even, it's not so clear you have in world history there's a record that there was a period of time when Egypt ceased to exist. Is there such a thing? The nation, a 40-year period of time where there was no living creature walking through the nation of Egypt? Is there such a thing in the secular world history?
The Egypt, which we know now, is not that Egypt it was before.
It's not?
No, Mamluks destroyed Egypt. Mamluks, they brought in the Muslims.
Okay, so maybe it's true. So maybe it is true. Maybe there is. You have to study. I don't know anything about history.
The
land is the same, but is there a record in world history? This 40-year period of time in world study. Go take a course in world history in the history of the Middle East. Find the period of time when Egypt.
Like the pharaohs disappeared.
Ceased to exist.
That's what you have to know.
No, that we know. That Rabbi Mayaski says he knows. He's very into this. Is that the Egyptians? They rewrote part of their history. The Egyptians they were so embarrassed what happened with Yitzias Mitzrayim. So it was purged from the record. That is a fact. That has already been proven, is that there was manipulation and there was rewriting of ancient Egyptian history to hide, to conceal the humiliation they suffered at the time of the Torah, of Moshe and Yitzias Mitzrayim. But that's a different period. That's going back more than 1,000 years from the time that we're discussing now. We're discussing now the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon. Shortly after the Churban, at least according to the Pshuta Shel Mikra, 8 years after the Churban, at least according to the Malbim, 8 years after the Churban Bayis Rishon, Nebuchadnezzar ascended to conquer, to destroy Mitzrayim one more time, and this was a fatal blow, and there was nothing left in Egypt for 40 years. In secular history, world history, there's such a thing where we find that Egypt ceased a very long period of time. 40 years, there was not a living creature walking through the land. But that's what it says here.
It could just be that there was nothing going on.
Nothing going on, is that what it means? But the words are much stronger. It says in the pasuk we read, is that v'lo savar, pasuk yud aleph, lo savar ba regel adam, regel behema lo savar ba, v'lo seshev arboim shana. It's pretty powerful stuff. And now we're learning that after these 40 years, they will be resettled. They'll even come back to Pasreis. They'll rebuild themselves. They'll create their unique mechuras sam, their unique culture, their unique stamp on this world. But it's not going to be the same. You'll never be recognized for the rest of world history until the end of days as being a major player in world events. You'll always be second fiddle. Always going to be sitting on the sidelines and not have a major influence. Let's see what it says again. The Mitzvah. Pesuk v'shafti yashiv b'nei hashav yishol Mitzrayim v'yashiv l'oysel l'eretz pasreis l'eretz migurosam. Notice how the Mitzvah, he makes believe that it says the word migurosam instead of the word mechurosam. He substitutes the chaf for the gimel. You will return to the land of your dwelling. Pasuk hezvav min ha'mamlechois b'shom ha'mamlechois hati ha'shefalov los tesnasei oid ala goyim l'mshol bohem. You'll no longer rule. V'him atatim amit anosheha leval tim shobagoyim. I will diminish its population so that they do not have power to rule over the nations. B'yot chazak v'koyach marbis hamarbis anshei mulchama with a powerful army. V'lo ye'od me'ata lo yivtuchu. Now that there is no Egypt, the Jewish people will no longer put their confidence in you. Bo yisrael ki lo ye le'el yado la'yos le'ezer. They will no longer have power to do anything for you. This, I mean, obviously, the words jump out of the page. The Nisoyan of this generation, I'm not trying to compare America to Mitzrayim, as Michal pointed out to me, I'm not trying to make any comparison, but you can't deny the fact that it is a very, very great Nisoyan today that Eretz Yisrael, the state of Israel, Eretz Yisrael, we feel very comfortable that America has our back. I mean, what more do you want? I mean, the billions of dollars of aid that they provide, and And the constant, you know, the lobbying in Congress and the fact that President Trump visited Eretz Yisrael, this all
that's
is...
That's worse, though.
Right?
That's even greater than that aspect of it, is even greater than it was in the past.
Right, he has now... Even Obama, everything big you want to say about Obama, you can't deny the fact that in Obama's administration, they gave more money to Israel than any previous administration, besides the fact that all the criticism... I'm not coming to... It is the weapons. Look, Israel now has how many F-35s? They delivered with such a ceremony. The most advanced weapons in the world are found today in Israel, and these are American weapons. So it is
American weapons adopted by the Israelis. They adopted and improved.
Improved, exactly.
Stop already.
Okay, so who paid for the Iron Dome? Who paid for the Iron Dome?
Israel.
A lot of it was paid by miracle also.
The credit goes to...
make no mistake, what?
Peretz.
Peretz?
He was Peretz.
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 No. Peretz.
Peretz. He was the Minister of Defense, I think, by... Olmert. And he's the one who, when he looked through the binoculars, he looked through it was closed up. And he insisted on supporting it, even though the army was against it.
Well, they give a lot of credit to Nixon. Nixon, even though he was known to be a very big anti-Semite, so Six-Day War. I mean, the amount of weapons they sent. There was a plane leaving from America every 5 minutes. A military plane leaving from America.
What? All planes wanted a charter, but they were afraid. So he said, "Let's just army planes." So the army said it would take 2 weeks to set it up. Nixon told Kissinger, "I want it tomorrow." And Kissinger walked in and said, "Anyone who cannot live with this, walk out right now."
And every 5 minutes, there was an American military cargo plane taking off to Eretz Yisrael, delivering weapons, supplies. I mean, what more do you want? I mean, it's unbelievable. So it's not natural for us. It's not human beings to say Baruch Hashem. America has our back? Of course it is. How do you reconcile this with Ein lanu lishoin ela al avinu shebashamayim? So of course you have to hashtaglos. They're the shluchim. They are the agents of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a slippery slope. Of course. 100%. 1,000%. 1,000%. But you have to have the right perspective.
Given
so,
the way you described it, saying how unlikely it would seem.
Of course, this Hashem steps in, but unfortunately, it's human nature to slide down the slippery slope. Is that you forget they're only the agents of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, leave Melachim b'yad Hashem, and leave Hashem out of the equation a little bit, and that was exactly what happened in what wasn't the same thing when it did with Mitzrayim and Sancheir and Nebuchadnezzar. Of course, they were davening. But we have to our shtadlos. We have to our shtadlos. We have to lobby in the world. The super world power was Egypt. They will help us. They will have our back. So what went wrong? They did nothing wrong. This is what you have to do. You have an obligation to do everything that you possibly can to protect yourself. Al derech hateva. So what went wrong? Why then does it say in this pasuk, "V'lo yia'oy leves Yisrael l'nivtach maskir avoin bifnoisam achareihem"? Well, why? What's the problem? You have an obligation, a duty to go and turn to anyone that can possibly help you and protect you. The answer is, it's all in the mind. It's all in the mind. You're right, we have to do this. We have to spend day and night glued in that sleep. But you have to still remember, Ein lanu lishon is the Ribbono
shel Olam. Well, it's an advantage to have Nevi'im around to tell you.
But it didn't work for them.
No, it didn't work,
so how much more so?
Now we don't even have that advantage.
So this is at least the lesson. There's no question this is one of the major... This is one of the major lessons to take out of learning Navi. Is you know, Baruch Hashem, we're very, very fortunate. But don't forget, don't repeat the same mistakes that were made 2,500 years ago. Look at this pasuk over here. It's a Mazkir Ovein. Let's see what it says. Let's finish up the Sudos. Rabbi, please try. ולא יהיה עוד מעט, לא יבטחו בו ישראל, כי לא יהיה אל יד ליוס לאיזה, למבטח למבטחן המעס כאופן על ישראל, במה שהם פוינים אחריהם, ואין לביתכם בו בהשם. ויועדו, אז ידעו הכל שאני השם והכל ביודי. Okay, now there's another, before we go to the Rashi, and the Malmö just wanted something important to mention, and that is the fact that Mitzrayim was redeemed. Mitzrayim, there was a kibbutz goliath from Mitzrayim, was a very, very great source of chizuk for Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael at this point in time, they were in Bavel. They were in Golis. Nebuchadnezzar exiled Klal Yisrael. 8 years later, he destroyed Egypt. Egypt was destroyed for 40 years. That's jump ahead. That's 48 years. We're 48 years into Golis. Yirmiyah said, not until 70 years will you return. And even when it became 72 years, it wasn't 70 years, it didn't happen right away. That was just Lepikida. It took many, many more years until they really returned and they rebuilt the Beis HaMikdash. And it was slow and long in coming. But yet, Klal Yisrael witnessed Geula, not by them. They witnessed Geula by another nation. They saw how Nebuchadnezzar obliterated a nation. And there was not a living creature in Egypt for 40 years. And yet, look at that, a renaissance, rebirth. They came back. They came back to live another day, to resettle their land. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu did this to Mitzrayim, al achas kama v'kama will HaKadosh Baruch Hu do this for us. V'netzach Yisrael lo yishaker. Certainly after Yirmiyah, Klaishad, and Navi telling them that this would be the case. So this was a living example, this event of watching the kibbutz Golias of Mitzrayim was a very, very great source of strength and chizuk for Klal Yisrael that they too will merit geula in the proper time.
Malbim breaks down the years here between the
Okay, when we come to that, let's first see the Radak, Rashi and Radak. Rashi also breaks down that. Okay, let's just go one step at a time. So this is, let's now go to Rashi. Rashi started with Pasuk Yud Gimel Yud Aleph. First is Mechurasam. Egypt Pasros will be the place of Eretz Migraham, which we're also calling Mechurasam Migurasam. So first he says he changed the Chaf and the Gimel, and then Losh Nacher Kmo Tol Dosam. Now that's a new that's a different interpretation. That means they're generations. The land of Tol Dosam. How does Mechurasam mean Tol Dosam? I don't know. Over here, over here on the side, you don't have this in your edition. He says it's also from the same idea, Megurasam. It's the same thing. When you have to change the Chaf and the Gimel, Perish Mokai Meladito, the place where, Lashon of Mogur, where you're born. And the place where you're born represents all the generations, the heritage, where your ancestors have lived before you. Shesham Nikeres Mishpachta, that's where your family is noticeable. Okay, well, let's see. We'll see in a moment an interpretation. First, the next Rashi. Levilti Ridois Bagoyim Lashon Mem Shalah. Egypt will no longer have any prominence, any dominion. Kemo Ridu Bidgas Hayom. The word Ridu means they will rule. They will rule among the fish of the sea. Rule over. Man will rule over the fish of the sea. Pasuk to Zion Lo Yim Mitzrayim Levetz Yisrael Oid Lemivtach. They will no longer be a source of support. They will no longer foolishly assume that Egypt will come to our rescue because they cease to the reliance. So here Rashi says something a little bit more than I told you. He says that in addition to the fact, the lack of emuna that Klal Yisrael had for Hashem, they put their faith in Egypt. They also violated the pasuk in the Torah. The Torah says when you leave Egypt, you're not allowed to return to Egypt. Lo so sifu l'roisam od. It's a loisase in the Torah, according to one interpretation, that you're not allowed to go back and live in Egypt. You're not allowed to go back even visit. You're not allowed to go back and look at what's going on in Egypt, to associate yourself with Egypt. There's a loisase. No, so they're allowed to have Hetayim for all this. You're just going there, it's just as a tour, you're going there to learn, Islamic. The Rambam lived in Egypt. Okay, the Rambam, he wasn't a tourist. He actually lived there and he had a good job. He worked for the king. and he was the physician for the king. And Rambam would sign his letters. There's a legend, there's a truth, and actually there's a debate. He would sign his letters, I am Moshe ben Maimon, who's over on the Issa Deraisa every single day of Lo Sisifun L'Roisam, I forgot whatever the Pasuk says, you're not allowed to return to Mitzrayim. He would sign his letters acknowledging that he is living in sin. There's a debate if those letters are authentic, if he really wrote this. It's a very big halachic issue of living in Egypt. There was a from Jew who was the ambassador, the United States ambassador. Remember his name?
Danny Kurtzer.
So he was the Jew. He was a Shomer Shabbos, the ambassador from the United States in Egypt. They built for him a kosher kitchen. Okay, the United States paid for a kosher kitchen. I remember he once came to my father's shul for Shalosh Shus, and he spoke. And he described his experience in Egypt, his accommodations, politics. It was fascinating. He brought the house down. Okay, there was no security though. He came all alone, and the whole community came. And he described all the different things going on over there. It could be someone they mentioned. Someone didn't mention. What about the halacha? I don't know. It sticks in my mind. There was a discussion. The halacha. How are you allowed to live in Egypt? He's not living there. He's just an ambassador. This is not his
technically, if you're in the
does halacha recognize that?
It's American.
An embassy, international law. Embassy has the status of the karka of the nation. The karka of the. You are immune to The laws of the land. You know, so that is in the Holocaust. That was one of the most critical laws that was important for the war, for the people in the concentration camps going through the horrors of the Holocaust to communicate with the Americans of what's going on. That they should do something, that they should come save them. The Varat Sol, that was really a little too late, but because every communication during the war.
In Hungary, when Wallenberg came,
he basically
established what's called Schutzhausen.
Diplomatic channels.
Yeah, no, houses that came under the Swedish rule.
And therefore, they were not subject to the censorship.
Yeah.
Every message that you would pass to America, there were some critical messages that were passed to America that were instrumental in saving at least some people. I don't know how many, but everything that came to America was intercepted. It was intercepted, and if it says something that the government did not want to hear, the government over there was a cover-up. It's well known. They wanted to silence reports of what was actually happening in Poland and Europe and Russia, the concentration camps, they silenced it. They just did not let the communication go through. So in order to get the message out, they had to go through diplomatic channels, which were not subject to censorship and interception. And so what does halacha say about such a thing? You want to say a chiddush that the land in the embassy in Mitzrayim is really called United States of America, so there's no violation of the halacha of lo yisosifun l'roisam od? It's quite a stretch. Quite a creative idea to say that halacha recognizes this principle, so there's no violation for Danny Kurtzer to live in Egypt. How many years was he there? For many years. He was there for a number of years. But he didn't come on to that. Obviously, he's only there as a Hatzolos Nefasha. He's there for many, there are 100 Ethereum of why. It's Big Shiloh's going to tour. You want to go see the pyramids. So are you allowed to go touring Egypt? You'd be shocked that some Paiskim don't allow it. There are some Paiskim that say it's not in the spirit of Halacha to go on a tour to Egypt. You have nowhere else to go. You have to go visit the pyramids. You can't find another place to go.
So people go back to Germany.
What?
There's no way to go back to Germany.
There's no way to Daraisa. Germany, there's no pasuk in the Torah. The pasuk in the Torah says, "Lo seisifun
l'roisamot."
No, it's a pasuk in the Torah. There's a pasuk in the Torah that prohibits a person to return back to Egypt. Beferish a pasuk. So you have many heterim. I'm not taking the same path, the same route. I'm going in a different mahalach. I'm not going to live there. I'm only going to visit. I'm going there for parnasa. I'm going there for atzolos nefashos. There are 100 heterim. But the bottom line is, the Torah says, don't do it. So don't do it. So you want to circumvent, so it's not in the spirit of halacha. You have nowhere else to visit. go to the other place to visit in the world. Some people know they have to go see. They have to have an appreciation of what it means, what the pyramids are all about. So, what?
He was there for many years.
He was there for many years as in Egypt. Okay, so I don't know. I don't know. I vaguely remember reading about this. I don't know. Okay, but any event, look, the Rambam. Wait a minute, the Rambam was there. The Rambam will live there for many years. He had no choice. But you have a choice. It's a whole different story. Any event over here, Rashi over here says that the Haskaras Avon is a double Haskaras Avon. We mentioned the Haskaras Avon was simply mean is that the Haftocha, the fact that Klal Yisrael, they rely, they put their confidence in Egypt, that Egypt would protect them and abandon faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that is the Maskeras Avon. Rashi puts, really hammers it a little bit more, and he says, Beferish HaPasek, the Pasek says, Lo so sifu l'roisam od. What are you going back there? What are you going and sending gifts? Malachim, why are you lobbying in the Mitzrayim and doing all of these things? It's a gzeres hakosov, you're not allowed to do this. So this was always a case of mazkir maskeres ovein. Today we don't look at it like that. We look at you doing it for atzolos nefashos. So
does anybody list this in the Taryag Mitzvahs?
Yes, yeah. Yes. Everyone lists this. Everyone. This is an Isser Deraisa to return back to Egypt. To return back to Egypt is one of the 100% one of the 365 lois assays. There are 365 lois assays, 248 assays. All right, let's do the radak. Radak on these psukim. We finish all psukim. Rashi, the radak. Pasuk, really out of time here. So quickly, Pasuk Yigil. The only few are docs. You give me kikar Hashem b'varhu v'shafti m'chur asam k'ma m'gur asam arvet ha'shagorba pasuk tezvav bim hamamlachos v'him atetim hepechini mafrichah v'bisicha. The opposite of what the bracha that Hashem gave to Avraham. I will cause you to be numerous. I will cause you to increase. You're going to be reduced to mokar. Okay, patezvav lo ye'o derech klal al am etzrayim.
Rashi says, I told you, the Radak tells you the way I translated originally, the Mazkir Avoyin, like Rashi, is that you exchange me for them. Now you mentioned over here the Malbum, so let's see the Malbum very quickly. The Malbum, you mentioned the numbers, so it's Pasuk Yudeis. Let's just do that one Pasuk. Pasuk Yudeis says, V'nasati chutz mizeh yeh churban gam b'srivos Mitzrayim. What's all that noise? Okay, so let's go to Pasuk Yud Gimel. Malbum Pasuk Yud Gimel. Miketz are born after 40 years. Ki Mitzrayim Nechra B'Shnas B'Chof Zayin L'Nevuchadnezzar. On the 27th year of Nevuchadnezzar's reign is when Nevuchadnezzar came to destroy Mitzrayim. That's exactly what it said in the Rashi. V'hu Molach Hamisha V'Arboim Shana. And Nebuchadnezzar was a king for how many years? 45 years. So Hare Nishar Yud Ches L'Malchuso. That means that there were 18 years left in the reign of Nebuchadnezzar until he died. From the time that Nebuchadnezzar conquered Egypt until he would die, until his son Evel Meroidach would succeed him, was 18 years. The Acharav Molach Evel Meroidach Chof Beis Shana. So that is a grand total of Haim Arboim Shana. So that's the Malbim's put a very important significant event, and that's really what that's the beginning of the next parak. Really leads into the next psuk. Lead into this ki b'shnas aleph lebal shetzar. So there was Nebuchadnezzar, Evel Meroidach, and then the grandson was Bal Shetzar. In the first year of the malchus of Bal Shetzar, that's when Mitzrayim was restored. Nemro Nevuas Paras LeDaniel, and it's at that moment in time when Daniel revealed the dream, he revealed the Nevu of Paras. Umeoz Tischilu Hagoyim LaShu B'Mei Melech Paras. It's a new order has come to this world. Even though still Belshazzar is in control, Nevuchadnezzar and Mount Bavel is still controlling the shots, but already the handwriting is on the wall. Literally, the handwriting is on the wall. It's already the time when the changing of the guards, the new authority will be transferred soon. It's already been predicted to Paras. And when Paras comes to power, all of the accomplishments, the achievements of Nebuchadnezzar are going to be undone. Like Trump, Trump is on a crusade to undo every single thing Obama did. Did you notice that? Every single thing Obama did, he's trying to undo. So that's exactly what happened. Nebuchadnezzar, one of his crowning his achievements was the destruction of Mitzrayim. Now that Nebuchadnezzar's reign is over, which includes him and his son, Mitzrayim will be restored. What else did Nebuchadnezzar do? He destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. When he's gone, who's going to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash? Paras, Koresh. Koresh, Melech Paras, is going to give the directive, you can go rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. So when the new king comes to town, when the new world leader comes to town, all of the decrees, the edicts, the accomplishments of the previous reign of power are going to be overturned. Your laws are only as good as you're in power. Once you're out of power, everything that you have accomplished is subject to reversal. We see that in our country, and that was true in the world scene as well. That's a very beautiful yisod, telling you the significance. The 40 years, maybe this would fit if you learn what's the significance of 40 years. Until now, we learned, like Rashi learned to tell us, is that it's payday for the 42 years, going back to Paro Melech Mitzrayim, the time of Yosef. So there were 40 more years where Egypt had to be destroyed. According to this Malbim, that's not the point. The point over here is there are 40 more years left until the Malchus of Bavel begins to come to an end. There are still 18 more years left in the Malchus of Nebuchadnezzar. There are 22 years for his son Evel Merodach. That's 40. And then with Belshazzar, who's the grandson, who's still in control, he's going to be there, I think, for 2 years. Right? Is that correct? He's there for 2 years? Belshazzar? How long did he reign Belshazzar? For 2 years? For 3 years? So even though he's going to reign for a short period of time, 2-3 years, already with the beginning of Belshazzar, the changing of the guards has been put into motion. And that's why the accomplishments of Nebuchadnezzar are going now to begin to change. Mitzrayim is going to witness a renaissance. And Klal Yisrael, even though nothing happened, Daniel is already giving over the nevuah that Paras will rise to power and allow the Jewish people to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. So that's the 40 years. It's 40 years simply because how much more time do we have left until Nebuchadnezzar, until he comes to an end? Of course, it's only one dimension. It's not a contradiction. What Rashi says is that 40 years is the payday, is the debt of the 42 years of famine that took place from the time of Paro to the time of Yosef.